Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me and suffering in this season as well is my co-host and lovely friend, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Hello, I'm here this time.
Was that almost like a Russian accent? Like, hello, I am here for the...
I don't even know what to say to that.
And also with us, the torture of the year. Amy's here.
Much rage from the other side of the table.
We are taking on the most film of the last two decades. Time. This movie honestly should be burned. It should be like locked away. And yet here we are celebrating its whatever anniversary. I don't 20th. Care. And like I said, I don't care. We're going to be talking about Love Actually. So stick around as we dive into that. And you may want to turn the volume down because this is probably going to get loud. But before we get into any of those juicy bits and info, Spencer, give us some opening credits.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
Thursday!
On all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website, filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got to add Threads in there too because Threads is also at filmlosophy101.
Blue Sky?
No, that's...
Darn it.
Stop.
We got sniped.
Yeah, that's right. You can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, even crappy romance movies like this one. If you're looking for it, we got it, unfortunately. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also catch us wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into Your Heart's Desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe. Look for us there and listen to us. Hear us with your ear holes. And let us know what you think. If you got a comment, drop it in the comment section down below. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
They really have this year.
We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. I did want to bring up, so obviously... this is going to be a really interesting review as we're going to be discussing a movie that really has no... it's aged horribly. But we're going to talk about all of that wonderfulness.
Did it age horribly? It's going to be my first question because it seems like it should have been consistently bad.
Right? Oh, my God. Seriously. But I'm going to save it. We're going to save it.
There's because, so much delicious content.
And it's all Amy's fault. So just we can put this out there.
Suffering
No, this is there's a difference between a season of suffering and then this
suffering
trash heap, this fire dumpster, you know, filled with
it's
rotten
not even
baby.
A dumpster fire. It's a fire dumpster.
The fact that Amy actually wanted to watch this movie again, as if she saw it the first time and was like, "Oh my God, this should be something everybody should see," and then shared it with us. It scares me for the future, Spencer. It does. But before we dive into that, I did want to talk about something. So one of the biggest things that's been coming up more so in conversation within not just the critics, but also in audiences also everywhere, has been what I have been proclaiming for the last almost 4 years. And that is superhero oversaturation.
Superhero fatigue, ultimately,
we're getting into an age where we're getting into a time actually where there are now people like voicing out their concerns for the fact that they feel like there's too much superhero stuff out there now. Mm-hmm. Before, I mean, from 2007 all the way up until maybe about 6-7 years ago, there was an okay amount of Marvel movies, of maybe one, maybe two. But then with the influx that Disney Plus is bringing, plus all the other content that is just being thrown at people, we're getting like 3 to 4 Marvel movies as well as 2 Marvel series every year. We're getting inundated with superhero stuff. So I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Where do you feel we are on that, you know, spectrum that kind of, you know, ballast of whether or not we're either in the arena of already fatigue or we're getting there. Because obviously, within the three of us here, there's different opinions, and there are some who think a little more cheerfully or lighter on the subject. There's some who maybe have a much more stronger opinion on the subject. Mm-hmm. I want to know what your guys' thoughts are. Let's start with Spencer.
Okay. I feel like part of the problem is that it is oversaturation, but I feel like what they're doing is they are slowly making the movies more comic book-like. Mm. In the sense that there's like multiple things going on at like the same time, mm-hmm. and like they're expecting everyone to watch it. But here's the thing. Not everyone's into comic books.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but that leads you to the problem of like, you know, since like before, since it was like there were so few and it was narrow, it was really easy for people who like weren't super into it to just like follow along with like the cultural zeitgeist at the time.
Yeah. Or at least have an option if they go to the movie theater, there's something other than.
Yeah. But now, like, when you're coming in with, like, required homework, almost kind of like how DC movies back in, like, 2017, you kind of needed to read the comic books to have, like, a full understanding. This one is like, you know, well, you have to watch the TV series and, like, other attached media to make sure you know what's going on with, like, why all these people are here.
Yeah.
Like, that becomes a lot, and then it just becomes easier to skip things.
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. Because now, not only are you doing what fans made fun of what other brands did long ago, you're doing it in a way where it's all working within the same machine. Now, not only do you have to watch, or you have to read the comic books at certain points, but you also have to watch all the shows that you can only get through the main brand's services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of the snake eating its own tail. Amy, speaking of snake, and Amy, what are your thoughts on this? No, because he said Ouroboros, the Loki series.
You said it, speaking of snake, it threw to me. I know you meant it there, but my brain goes, wait a minute. I hear you.
This is an audio podcast.
No one can see my drop jaw exactly. on the floor. No, I actually agree with Spencer. Superhero fatigue has been around for a long time. Even with comic book readers, there has been space for you as a comic book reader to step back because they inundate you with so many storylines, so many things happening at the same time, so many crossovers, so many events. It becomes just too taxing mentally, not only mentally, emotionally, physically, but also financially. And Marvel really has taken we're going to just keep pushing things out to make money now instead of making product that people are excited about. And I love having the variety, but the fact of the matter is when you've gotten, you've gotten three or four new Marvel shows in less than the last 6 months, easily, because you had Secret War or Secret Invasion, whatever was before that. Then you had the Marvels that were coming out, and then we had Loki, which was something actually like we were excited about. Mm-hmm. It creates this, as Spencer said, the expectation that you've watched everything, just even get into a movie and be caught up. Mm-hmm. And then you're also running against the wheel of everybody's talking about this movie, everybody's brought this up, and we have become so culturally obsessed with the hunt for the almighty Easter egg that if you don't know, push up your glasses, don't know, then you're not in the know. Suddenly, it's becoming simultaneously not cool to be a nerd, and you're too cool because you're a nerd. And it's frustrating. So, in my opinion, I have gradually taken steps back from Marvel shows unless I'm actually invested inside of that character and I know some of that storyline. A perfect example, I don't know a lot about Echo. And while I think that's an amazing story to be able to tell, also where she lines up in that universe, I don't have enough background, but also I'm tired. Like, I love the Young Avengers and we've been teasing Young Avengers forever, but even now I'm also like, I could wait a couple of years for Young Avengers for me to get excited again. But I don't want to, much like going to see the Marvels, even though I do love each of those characters individually and what they do in the comic books. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of like every which way till Sunday, and it had nothing to do with the performers. It was the fact that the mouse wanted money and the mouse was going to push these people to make the money.
Yeah. It's also kind of an interesting dilemma that they have where even though they're aware that they are creating this division between fans and people who are wanting to be fans, like the little kids that are coming up and finally coming of age to watch those particular Marvel movies, it is interesting that they are still pushing out and churning as much as possible to continually push out content and whatnot. And who knows? I mean, it's kind of like that whole mindset of the gambler, how the gambler will go and splurge as much of his money as possible, but it's always, you know, oh, the next hand is going to fix it, or the next hand is going to do that. I feel like that's kind of where Disney is and Marvel in terms of, well, the next hand, the next phase is going to fix it. Well, the next phase is going to make it better. It's going to add this and that. I don't know.
And I kind of wonder also if Feige is, like, not that he's beating, like, he's believing his own hype, mm-hmm. but if he's getting so much pressure from the top to continue to produce, mm. that he's not having the space to just enjoy, like, what he likes about Marvel, what he likes about the different stories. Because before we hit, what, phase three? Mm-hmm. Because we're in phase two, where suddenly there was a massive...
No, I think we're in... We're in phase
five.
Yeah, we're in phase five.
But like when we first started out, when they were kind of slow rolling and they were gentler, essentially that ramp up plan, when we were still in the ramp and it was baby ramp, he seemed to be having like the best time and we were excited to see what was coming out. And now it's just like too much.
Well,
too much.
Who knows? And honestly, it's ultimately, the chips are falling and the dominoes are toppling over because people are being vocal about it and talking about it. But I honestly feel like we're in the last days of not the overall brand, but the consistency of how much things are coming out. Like, and by final days, I don't mean like last days as in, oh, we're like 2 weeks away. I'm just like, we're like a couple years out before they realize they...
The car's sputtering.
Yeah, they're running out of gas. And as much as there's great ideas out there, the formula is getting old and nothing has really changed out of the formula except for, let's be honest, you know, Into the Spider-Verse. You know, Miles Morales changed the entire movie platform.
Yeah, but like he's so different that like it's like an over there thing.
Well, but no. It's not just like that he's so different. It's just that there are tons of unique stories just like him, but nobody is bold or lucky enough, I guess, because I don't want to put Sony and Bold in the same sentence, you know. But
sorry, Morbius, we saw you.
Exactly. But like, it's just lightning just struck in the right exact time and place for that to happen and for that to just create what it did, that it's so unique. And I don't know if Marvel is bold enough to create so much of their, you know, their gambling on something as, in my mind, how they see inconsequential as somebody like Miles. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Like, or somebody like Wade, because we can talk even before the merger with Fox, that when Deadpool came out, it was like everybody who had loved Deadpool, who had read the comic books, it was like Ryan did his due diligence. He loved on that character and it was so much fun that it was a revitalization of not only that character, but for Fox after how many years of trying consistently, like, and then Mouse goes, give to me.
Yeah.
Give to me all.
So it's one of those things where we're just going to have to keep an eye on it and see how things progress. Side note, I don't know if you guys saw, there was an official book that showed the MCU timeline, the actual accurate timeline. Sadly and oddly enough, they removed just about all of the ABC and Netflix shows as far as canon from the MCU universe.
Wait, I thought that they were doing a new Deadpool show that was a continuation, or is it just
apparently it's not a continuation? It's not going to be a recasting. It's just a rebuilding with the same characters.
Well, Peggy, you live in my heart for forever, baby.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. She's canon. She's the only one that's canon.
My gorgeous queen.
Peggy sailed through.
She's the only one who's canon. Haley. Apparently, it has it listed that, what's his name?
Jarvis.
No.
Coulson?
Agent Coulson. It has him listed that he died at the events of the first Avengers
movie.
So,
in other words, he never went to Tahiti and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist, which means all of that entire Inhumans, the Inhumans are dead too.
Yep.
Holy crackballs.
So that's so as much as this is a great concept and great conversation piece, I just wanted to throw that so that way
Worst throw ever.
Yeah, I know. But
that was intriguing.
Speaking of worst throw ever, we are transitioning over to the
love indubitably
main conversation of the evening, and that is the god awful worst Christmas movie ever. Move over, Santa Claus, the Santa Claus the movie.
Yeah,
our review,
moving up in the world.
Our review of Love Actually. yeah. So, with that said, Spencer, just give us just talk, Spencer.
The film follows the lives of eight very different couples in dealing with their love lives in various loosely interrelated tales, all set during a frantic month before Christmas in London, England.
Written and directed by Richard Curtis, the film stars Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, Colin Firth. Excuse me. Laura Linney, Emma Thompson, Alan Rickman, Bill Nighy, Keira Knightley, Martine McCutcheon, Rowan Atkinson, Billy Bob Thornton, Thomas Sangster, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Martin Freeman. You know what's funny? I love the fact that I know how to say Chiwetel Ejiofor so much because of the fact that when Chad came in and I believe we saw Serenity, he made sure that everybody knew how to pronounce that man's name. So I learned how to say Chiwetel.
Not Kinky Boots?
No.
Chiwetel Ejiofor is the main character in Kinky Boots.
Yeah, well, this
very
is...
Good
so
keep going.
As fans of things like Firefly, we kind of go... Anyway, a couple key pieces of information about this movie. Writer and director Richard Curtis was originally working on two separate movies. One about Prime Minister David, played by Hugh Grant, and the other about Jamie, played by Colin Firth. When the plots turned out to be so similar, he ended up merging them into a single movie.
That's
this is
not
the idiocy of how this movie was put together. That he was like, oh, I got a movie here, I got a movie there, and then like Plato just smashed them together. Much like the writing on this film.
I wonder if that taco commercial girl existed back then where she was like, why not both?
Fuck.
Right? or that...
The little girl that gets thrown up in the chair because you picked up the hard and the soft taco. Oh, man.
And mind you, the information, the facts about this movie, they increase in ridiculousness because of how much I did not like this movie. So this next piece of information. Knowing about Billy Bob Thornton's quite unusual fear of antique furniture, Hugh Grant would sometimes flash a piece of antique, which is abundant in England, in front of Thornton just before the cameras rolled. And watch him freak out in amusement.
I would do that too.
I have many questions.
Yeah. That's Who's great. Afraid of antique furniture?
Why? Is there like a story? Did like it murder like his grandmother
Spencer,
or something?
Spencer.
It could be no. It fell over.
It was on an episode of Law and Order SVU. We don't talk about it.
There it goes.
And lastly, the airport greetings. Talk about cringe. We're talking
this
about cringe within this movie. The airport greeting footage at the beginning and end of the movie is real. Writer and director Richard Curtis had a team of cameramen film at Heathrow Airport for a week. And whenever they saw something that would fit in, they asked the people involved for permission to use the footage.
Super cringe.
It's like you have people coming back from trips and you're having whatever and like, excuse me, sir, can I take a quick photo of you? Yeah, just for a movie. And it's like, and they're like, oh, my son just got back from the military.
Oh, are you talking about that sequence at the very end where it's just a whole
and
bunch
the
of
very
people?
And the very beginning.
Oh, yes, and the beginning.
I know we had trouble remembering what happened. So, yeah, that's super cringe. Speaking of which, I'll get into that second, but this movie, obviously when we're talking about spoilers, this movie's been out for 20 plus years. I don't know why it has, but it's been out and we're talking about it. So spoiler alert, I don't really care if you haven't seen it and you don't want to hear spoilers. I didn't want this either. So we're in the same boat. First, last, and only warning, spoiler alert. Now, mind you, now, the only way that we okay, I'm gonna be personal about this. The only way that I was ever gonna watch this movie was if I had a little, you know,
a little something something,
little something something while I was watching it. You know, little, well, not you say that weird, like a little drink with that, something to drink, and then luckily because the rest of the world doesn't like this movie as much as I do, there are drinking games for this movie.
This drinking game
It's Ooh. Murder.
Like, so continue.
So shout out to BuzzFeed, because BuzzFeed was the one who created this one.
Okay, now I'm not surprised it's murder now. Yeah. I didn't know it was BuzzFeed.
It was BuzzFeed. It said BuzzFeed in the corner. BuzzFeed put out a drinking game pertaining to this movie, and it essentially had people drinking at every 5 seconds of this movie, because
pretty much.
And it wasn't even like just small little things. It was like regular things that you would think would take time.
Nope.
And it just happens to happen every like couple seconds in this movie.
We were skunked in less than 8 minutes. Literally.
I don't know if we were skunked, but we were like buzzed.
Because I was buzzed at 2. I was very cheerful at 7, 8. I remember we had a long pause.
No. Okay, here's the thing. Like, we started pausing the movie. We had to continue the next day. It's a two hour and 15 minute movie. And we started at
5:45.
We started at 5:45.
We stopped at like after midnight.
Yeah, so we started at about 5:30, 5:45. We got snacks, we got drinks, we set up everything. We're sitting, and as soon as the cameras, like, as soon as the film starts going, we're already having to take sips. And by like 8 minutes in, we had to stop because we were like, okay, where are we at here? And we realized that we had to like refill glasses and whatnot. And by the time we got to 30 minutes in,
we were gone.
Yeah.
We were gone.
We tried, now, mind you, we did like, soldier on and got to an hour and 30 minutes into this.
Yes, there was 30 minutes remaining
by midnight.
But with the constant stopping and regoing and stopping and regoing, we got to probably an hour and a half in the movie by about 10 o'clock. Mm. It was about 10 o'clock, 11-ish.
So we were, by the time we got to an hour and 30 minutes, it was after midnight. Mm, yes. We didn't restart the movie.
No. We stopped. We stopped at an hour and 30, well before midnight, because we were talking about going back to the movie, but we didn't realize it until it was after midnight. And we're like, yeah, we're gonna have to wait till tomorrow. So we didn't stop the movie at. Yeah, we just.
Should I read what the sips for the drinks are for the Love Actually drinking
sure.
game?
Sure, yes.
So the first one, sorry for the fruity language, everyone. Words, you hear someone say any of the following words: wank, bugger, piss, bollocks, or bloody. Someone says the word actually, which happens in the first, in less than a minute. Colin Firth says something wrong in Portuguese or makes any poor attempt to communicate with Aurelia. Outfits. Someone wears a Christmas sweater,
there's so many
Santa-inspired outfit, or any type of Christmas paraphernalia. You see someone wearing a turtleneck. That got us all the time.
Yeah.
It was turtleneck.
They live in turtlenecks.
They do. Music. The song Christmas is All Around You starts, which literally starts after the title card. Sam plays the drums. The music swells when someone admits their true emotions. Actions. Someone whispers fervently into a phone. You see an example of a non-romantic love and affection, like buddy love. You see a storyline cross, which was the detriment of both these guys because I'd seen it so many times. Someone cries, or Hugh Grant makes you cringe, which was you were trying to drink immediately when he was doing the narration over the open.
He was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those were the parameters for the drinking game. And yeah. We obviously, the next day when we restarted the movie, we did not continue the drinking game because we wanted to finish the film.
No, we wanted to finish.
We stopped drinking when we restarted because we're just like, mm-mm.
Well, no. And here's the thing, though, Spencer, is that when we restarted it, mm-hmm. Amy was still calling things out. I'm like, we got a drink. And I'm like, no, we're not drinking. Amy over here trying to force us to restart the game. She goes,
If you want alcohol poisoning, play the Love Actually game.
Yeah, that's a quick way to get that. The thing that floored me is when we restarted the next day, I was like, well, we're probably going to have to move back because I forgot something. No.
Nope.
I did nothing.
You
didn't
change it all.
Yeah, it's all there.
Yep. And I'm like, it's like a really bad taste in your mouth. Like if you drink bad milk or you taste something that's not good, like it lingers in your tongue for a little while. This movie is the bad taste of movie history. Like this movie is not a good movie. And I'm calling it already right before we even get into it. I don't even want to do expectations or first impressions because it doesn't matter. Like, this movie, Amy's already seen it. It was her choice, so we already know her bad opinion.
We need to preface with, even before I was an intern, when I had met Eddie, and it had been Christmas time, I was like, hey, have you seen Love Actually? And he's like, no. I don't want to see it.
No. I knew way back then, too. Even before, so, it was like just a cringe movie. Like, everybody who talked about it was like, this is such a bad movie. And then people were like, oh, it's aged horribly. And I'm like, well, I don't want to see it.
20th anniversary was the only reason. And I told these guys.
No.
20th anniversary.
It was not just because it was the 20th anniversary. It's because she wanted to see it again. Yeah, which we were not going to pay for that garbage.
Which, mind you, Spencer brought up. I didn't even know it was going to be in theaters. And so I was just like, are you sure you don't want to see it in theaters? I was like, that would be mean. Eddie can't drink while we're watching it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Like, I actually had like heard almost nothing about this movie. Like, I knew it existed.
Okay.
But like, I was like, oh, it's like a rom-com that people are really into. I didn't know any of this. I just heard, no, Eddie's complaining. That was all I came in here with.
Which should be enough warning for you.
I don't think that's warning. I
was willing to do October. I was willing to do Asylum Month. Mm-hmm. I was willing to do the Sharknado movies.
And I was worried about you going through those.
And mind you, you can sit back for a second because you're the one who did all this. Those movies, I understood, like, okay, this was the objective. This is what I was going to have to do. Blah, blah, blah. I can muster through it. This movie, though, on this side is like whole nother like amazing bulk hot trash fire. Ugh. Like,
wow,
this
an
movie
amazing bulk complaint.
Bill that Nighy is not good. Who is a phenomenal actor in all other aspects, is made to look like a creepo, like weirdo pop singer in the UK who doesn't even believe in his own music in the movie. Like, I feel like Bill Nighy did not have to do any kind of acting. He's like, this is dumb. This song is dumb. I'm here to get paid.
Honestly, the song is terrible.
It was absolutely beyond terrible. And it's all Amy's fault. So,
I mean, I was all ready for Season of Suffering 2, Electric Boogaloo. And if this is the way we start out with the suffering, it can only go up from here.
It's week one.
It can only go up from here.
I'm very concerned.
It can only go up from here.
So here's so let's talk about the performances.
What's to say?
There's a ton of things to say.
I feel like there's almost nothing to say except that Hugh Grant was
bad.
Cringy.
Humans, bad, bad humans. Like, I feel like you could take just a page out of each one of these and just send it worldwide to every single actor and actress and say, "This is what you this is what you not do. Never, ever." I
mean, do you feel it in your fingers?
No. See, feels it this in is his toes. This is.
Spencer got it! Oh,
yes!
Oh, so worth it. Yep.
No, it's not worth it. This movie was not worth it. This movie needs to be like sent to the CIA, all governments, so that way they can see if these people are actually cringe as much as they are in real life.
Cringe government?
No, yeah. This needs to be sent off to that, like, in Indiana Jones when they're just boxing things up in that giant warehouse.
In the warehouse?
Just throw the movie in the warehouse.
Oh, absolutely. This does not need to go to any, like, celebratory archive. This needs to go just to a vault locked away somewhere deep down in an ocean far, far away. Yeah, like, I don't know if there's anybody as cringe. So, their performances were cringy, but...
Yeah.
Hugh Grant is just a cringy man. Like, every time he's in a movie, he just is, like, weird and awkward.
And Paddington, too.
And the fact that, like, this is the same man who divorced his ex-wife because he got caught with a prostitute back in the mid-90s. Do you not recall that?
I'm not a big fan of Hugh Grant.
Well, as somebody, you know, we're on a film podcast, so knowing that, you know, we have to have some
after
kind of
watching this, I'm not gonna care about Hugh Grant.
Well, the thing is, I used to watch some of his stuff. Like, I've known about it for
you
some
mean
time.
Four Weddings and a Funeral?
No. You want to keep going with your limited knowledge
know,
of what
I
you
guess.
Know about Hugh Grant?
I guess that was Richard Curtis also wrote that. So
oh, another did, bad movie is what you're saying.
The director that did this did that.
It's probably why I didn't see it. But I didn't see. Notting Hill?
I said Four Weddings and a Funeral.
No,
not
I was Hill. Wondering what else you were going to say.
No.
Anyway.
Yay!
Hugh Grant is just a cringy person. I just feel like anytime he's on screen, and now that he's older, He's an old cringy person.
I thought what was happening with him was that, like, you know, he was a good actor in the 90s, and then he just grew into, like, this cringy niche, like, acting roles.
Well, no.
I didn't realize that this has just apparently been what he's been doing. Well, no, because
before, what it was during the 90s, it was he was a cute, cheeky, you know, English actor. His cringe was considered cute. Okay. And so nobody checked him on it. And so he allowed that cringe to continue as he got older, and it's still the same cringe, but he's not cute anymore. He's older, and it's coming off as, like, creepy uncle vibe. Like, it definitely is not something that he should be proud of.
Although, if you need a creepy uncle for your movie,
then you'd have a creepy uncle on set, is what I'm saying. Like, that's what it feels like. Like, I feel like you have to, like, keep all your female staff off to one side, and, you know,
keep everyone away.
Like, so, ladies, just want you to know, Hugh Grant is on set today, so make sure that... Yeah, you raised your eyebrow, Amy, and you know he's like that, because it's like...
I can't speak to his conduct on set, and regardless of that, I don't want to get into a space where I could be sued for defamation of character. So.
He doesn't care? Do you honestly think we are the only people who have ever said this?
I don't know, and what that man does is what that man does.
I'm going to be honest with you. He doesn't care about you. So he's not even listening to any of the things that we're saying.
His publicist could listen to this, and then we get in trouble. And it's all you at that point, buddy.
I don't care.
Okay.
I've had Uwe Boll block me on Twitter. You think I really care about anything else? Like, honestly. But it's unfortunate because Colin Firth, decorated actor, really wonderful human being, as what it seems like, did phenomenal in movies like The King's Speech. He was also in Bridget Jones's Diary.
Also directed by this gentleman.
Really?
Yep.
The latter ones are weird, but the first one was interesting.
Same one.
It's like Colin Firth is so much better than what this movie puts him through. He's literally somebody who his character meets his housekeeper, maid, cleaner, whatever she is, 4 or 5 weeks before, doesn't have a single conversation with her because she speaks only Portuguese, and then goes all the way to where her family is to propose to her.
No, asks her dad.
But not before asking her dad to sell her to him. Her dad was willing to sell her to him, which is slavery, just extra steps. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that was super cringe. Liam Neeson, the macho action hero of the late 2000s. It's like, he needed to go look for somebody and not be in this movie because he was like super cringe as a dad.
Stepdad.
Either way, as a stepdad. Oh, and he made every point to mention that this isn't his son. It's his stepson. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just the two of y'all, buddy. Just call him your son. I mean, unless you're giving up, like...
He doesn't want him.
See, and that's the thing I wondered about. Because he really... Liam Neeson consistently, instead of saying, like, he's his dad, he's like, I'm his stepdad. I'm his stepfather. And I was like, but at this point, he's still your kid. Yep. And you're treating him just like your kid, but you're like, nah, he's my stepson. And I was like...
Honestly, I feel like he's, like, internally in this movie going back and forth. Like... like, he could be my kid, but then, like, he'll do something. It's like, nah, I don't want this kid.
I feel like that was the whole reason why he encouraged him so much at the airport to break rules and break the law. Mm-hmm. Because he's like, hey, if he gets taken, it's their kid now. Like, he just doesn't care anymore. And just like,
Have a certain set of skills at that point.
Nope, he doesn't. You know, the thing is, because, like, I was wondering about this movie takes place, like, it should be post 9/11. It was filmed after it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if this was a setup. Like, he was hoping that, like, the kid got, like, killed.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Run through the
when airport. You have a child running through things like that and avoiding the actual, like, authorities. You are doing something that probably shouldn't.
In a puffy jacket.
Yeah, in a puffy jacket. At the time, like, bombers and stuff like that were aplenty. And the real big scare at the time for people. Like, oh, someone's going to come into the airport, you know, and then blow themselves up, stuff like that. This little kid could have been easily used as that. I mean, he could have been, like, 10 feet away from the next gate and boom. And that would have been the end of it.
Yep.
That would have made for a much more... This would have been an interesting, like, prequel, if you will, to the Taken movies. This is how Liam Neeson goes and finds his next wife and develops those set of skills, if you will. That would have been interesting.
Oh my gosh.
And then, who's the other cringe? Oh, the biggest cringe one which is Andrew Lincoln.
Right next to Hugh Grant. This is...
Yeah, right next to Hugh Grant, because we haven't even talked about... That one's just politically ridiculous. But the bigger cringe one is Andrew Lincoln and Chiwetel Ejiofor, who are best friends. Chiwetel Ejiofor marries Keira Knightley, and Andrew Lincoln is, like, secretly crushing on her. But you don't know it until, like, three quarters of the movie in, who he never says a word, has, like, secret footage of her face and her body at the wedding, of nothing else. And then she finds out, and then that infamous scene where he's holding a sign saying, you know, say it's carolers, and I just wanted to make sure in Christmas, blah, blah, blah.
Which my favorite part is Spencer's like, this is where that came from? No idea. And I'm like, yep, this is where it came from.
And he's telling her, you know, that I'm in love with you, and I wanted to make sure that if I got a chance to, I would do it on Christmas Eve.
Because on Christmas, we tell the truth. Like,
no, we don't.
No, that's the line he uses. No, on but his everybody does saying, too. But I love other you're
no, that's
like,
what I'm saying. Like, no, nobody tells the truth on Christmas. It's like, no,
this is specifically the lying season.
It's like, kiddo, of course we couldn't afford that bike that you wanted. While I wear this
of
gold,
of course
watch.
I love your sister-in-law. Like, why would you think I don't?
Oh,
it's true.
Good.
It's true.
It's very true.
And so, and then on top of it, like he takes his note cards and then walks off, and Keira Knightley actually comes out and then kisses her.
I was so angry.
Right, you and me both. That's and it's
like,
I
and then at the end of the movie, they're like together, like Chiwetel Ejiofor and Keira Knightley are, it's a month later, they're at the airport waiting for someone or calling for her to come back, and Andrew Lincoln's just there like creepily like slinking like, hey, behind them, making goo-goo eyes at Keira Knightley. And it's like, dude, that's your best friend's wife. She just, they
oh,
just
he
got
clearly
married.
Clearly does not care.
Oh, nope. Obviously. And Lord knows what he was going to do with that footage. That's all I'm saying.
We all know. And the fact that like he was asked to make that footage and then he just thought nobody would check up on it.
Or nobody would ask to see it.
Yeah.
Like you were walking around with a video camera. Obviously, people were watching you film.
Yeah. Which is literally the reason that he gets found out, because Keira Knightley's like, hey, I just want to ask you. I saw you were filming during our wedding and my footage is all blue. I just want to see a picture of myself in the wedding dress I saw you film in. You've got footage. Like,
and
bro,
he's like,
oh,
I don't know where it's
like,
at.
At least he didn't even try to be like, hey, this is all I got. My battery ran out. Like, make some type of light. Nah, bro is just like, let it all hang out. Like, let her see this and then be okay with it. And I was like,
let it all hang out.
He didn't even like have like, you know, cover my butt footage of like my mm-mm friend. No, he cropped his friend out
all the time.
Yeah, they were all tight shots of her face, of her body, of, you know, her smile, and it's
of
like
her eyes.
Of her eyes. It's like, gross. Dude, that is like straight up serial killer like profile here. Like mm-hmm, without a doubt, Andrew Lincoln, no wonder you went to The Walking Dead. But it's it's like, and then on top of it all, cringe master himself, Hugh Grant, is just super weird to his staff. Has this whole thing with the...
He's the new hired prime minister. He literally walks in the door and he sees one of the like assistants or something. And he's just like, oh, she's hot. I want to be with her.
Yeah.
And then the way that has the turnabout, Billy Bob Thornton comes in.
Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Bob Thornton is the president of the United States in this movie. That's how messed up this movie is. Is they have Billy Bob Thornton as the president. He would be like, every single major room in this house is going to have a sex closet, and we're going to have, you know, places where you can do it. Like, that's all what Billy Bob thinks about. You know, after watching, what was that? The Santa? Oh, no. Bad Santa and all that kind of stuff. Like, oh, seriously.
Yeah, so. No, I didn't see that. But yeah, so what ends up happening is the secretary girl that Hugh Grant is crushing on happens to go in to bring tea to the president. And when Hugh Grant comes back and opens the door, she's standing there and Billy Bob Thornton is like really close to her. And she looks literally like she was cornered and could not get out of the room.
And of course, what does Hugh Grant do? He doesn't really put any blame on the president. He puts
Which
it all
crazy.
Like, yeah, he's like, oh, we need to build, you know, straight up, you know, we need to build, you know, relationships with the U.S. and blah, blah, blah. And that's it. And they give a good look to each other.
Well, and he sends her away and they have a press conference and then he decides, which there's a deleted scene that I remember seeing many years ago. And I was telling Spencer, I hadn't seen this movie in like almost 6 or 7 years till we saw it like this last Sunday. So there's a scene that I remember where he and the president have a conversation and then his like Hugh Grant's chief of staff basically tells him like, hey, you need to stand up for Britain. You can't let us be pushed around by America. And he's like, no, I won't do it. And then the whole situation happens with Her name's Natalie. Happens with Natalie. And then he decides when they go out in front of the press that he's like, we're going to stand up to bullies because we don't like bullies, and does this entire thing. And they cut out that section where he's actually having the conversation with his the head of whatever. And it literally, all you do is they cut to her like looking really salty at him in the press conference. And then he goes off on this whole thing about us standing up to bullies, and it has no place in it whatsoever. No. So you're just like,
So not only was the theatrical cut like a little discombobulating, Hugh Grant is just cringing all of that. And then he sends her away, and then he gets a Christmas card from her, and he's like, oh, I miss her now. And he takes the car, and he literally goes up and down her neighborhood because he remembers the street she lives on. And he goes up and down her neighborhood to find her knocking on each door.
He could not be bothered to bring the envelope with him for some reason.
Nope.
Or use his, you know, prime minister powers to find where this woman lives.
He should be able to ask.
Well, and let's also establish that her card, her Christmas card after she's been sent away, said, but I've always been yours. You're Natalie. And I'm like, that feels like entrapment, my friend. Like, any person who you haven't talked to and suddenly you're like romantic, I'm always yours. Like, so, no.
What was that? Was that I don't know. That was that one character from Princess and the Frog.
Charlotte?
I would kiss 1,000 frogs.
I would kiss 1,000 frogs to marry a prince and become a princess. Yeah.
That's what it sounded like.
She's ridiculous.
But even then, the way this movie ends, like, he finds her, they have to go to a school program. He goes and
turns
ends up running
into everybody's school program.
Yeah. He ends up running into his sister, whom, number one, his sister is surprised to see him because
his sister is Emma Thompson.
Because she's been inviting him for years to come and see the program. And the only reason why he's there is because his hot secretary assistant woman is bringing him around the back so they could probably have a little nookie, you know?
Snogging. Make out sessions.
No,
snog.
It's nookie.
It's nookie because he was hoping to get some.
I'm sorry. A shag in the carpet.
A shag is nookie. A snog is a makeout session.
We're in America, okay? And this movie was god awful. Anyway, and then on top of that, his sister Emma Thompson tells the assistant, like, oh my gosh, if my brother was 20 years younger, you'd be perfect for him. And it's like,
you'd be just his type.
Either way, it's like, what? So not only is he preying on younger children, but he's also
not a child.
When he was 21, she was probably just out of the vagina. So I'm pretty sure. Why are you raising your eyebrows over there? Because you're not saying anything.
She's just out of the vagina.
Yeah.
That reminds me of Rat Race when Cuba Gooding Jr. literally corners the guy in the bathroom and he's telling him that there's a
woman. Why are we talking about
having
Rat Race?
Because he goes, the vagina, like that. That's how that made me feel. Like that moment that you just being like, she's just out of the vagina. Like, I've said vagina.
She said vagina
times.
Like 5 times in a row right now. Anyway, so that's already like creeper vibes for Hugh Grant as a character. Human being in this movie. Like he's already. And then ultimately, while the program is going on, he takes her to a more hidden spot and trying to stay out of the public eye. And they start making out pretty heavily. And then the curtains go up to reveal this Merry Christmas. And the prime minister is making out with his 20-something-year-old assistant, and everyone can see. And he's just like, oh, just smile and wave, and they wander off the stage. And it's like, why? Like, was it worth it? Was it really worth it?
No, because now he's made Emma Thompson feel even worse.
Yeah, yeah. Which, oddly enough, Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman's story is it's the least amount of cringe, but it's still probably the most heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why? Why would you do that? To the two most, like, outstanding actors in the entire world. We're not even talking about in, like, the entire UK. Like, Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson are superb actors in this world. And you make Alan Rickman to be the sleaziest husband and Emma Thompson to be the most, I hate to say this, but dumb wife who decides to stay in a place where she is completely unhappy. But, hey, we got kids. Let's do that. So, like, it was sad. And it's like, I would never, ever, like, I feel like the next time, if I ever get the chance to see Emma Thompson, I would go up to her and say, I need to give you this. And I would give her a hug and say, this is for Love Actually.
actually.
Because, like, this, that movie just makes you sad at the end. Mm-hmm. So, Amy, why don't you give us the little prognosis or synopsis of their whole story?
Yeah, because since you're on the phone over there,
put it down.
Well, I was also looking because, so I was looking for other things that Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson have been in besides Harry Potter, and they did, and I remember.
Die Hard? Oh, you're talking about both of them together?
Together.
Oh, okay.
Which someone was saying if you watch Love Actually and then watch Die Hard automatically, you feel justified for what Alan Rickman did to Emma Thompson and him, like, falling off the building.
That's dumb. That makes no sense.
Somebody said.
That makes no sense. Did. He's German in Die Hard.
There was
Hans
another
Gruber?
Movie. There was another
like,
movie.
Like, seriously?
There was Hans? There was another movie that they did together that was, like, a resolution of this called The Sound of Lunch? Or something.
The Sound of Lunch?
It's Sound of Lunch? The Song of Lunch. The Sound of Lunch.
Your research is really on top. Here
the
is.
Song of Lunch. I was not
song. Okay.
There.
Song. We were hearing Sound of Lunch.
Sound.
Thanks.
You could do one finger salutes all you want. Just get it right.
I really want to hear those up. Potato crisp.
Right? Ooh, let's talk about crisp. The potato salad.
So, Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman's character, they're married. They have children. Emma Thompson gives my favorite line of the entire movie, which is really dumb. There was more than one lobster present at the birth of Jesus.
Lord above, get on with the story.
So, what we find out is they've been married for a long time. Alan Rickman has some flirty slash predatorial slash creeper.
She looked like a predatory.
She looked
like a predator.
Yeah. So he has this secretary at his law firm where Laura Linney works, where, like, literally it's everybody too, who has been like, hey, boss man, you know, you get me something shiny for Christmas, I'll give you whatever you want. And at first he's like he's like uncomfortable. But Bro doesn't say anything. And then suddenly he starts entertaining the idea.
Meanwhile, which is so weird because there's no point where she actually like lunges onto him. But it's like implied apparently on a phone call. And at the phone call, he decides, I need to get her something nice. Like, it's just, it's really weird.
And I feel like that's why I'm so confused, because he went from like, no, to I must do this. And I'm like, did I miss like some sort of wizard?
It must be another one of the, like, it must be one of those other deleted scenes that Amy has apparently.
So she starts being really like predatorial, and he's like, no. And then they go to the Christmas party, which happens to be at Andrew Lincoln's gallery. And she's like, she dresses up as a devil. She dances with Alan Rickman. And then she's basically like grinding up on him. Emma Thompson sees this and being the dutiful, diligent wife, which, come on, Emma, we know you're better than this. She's like stands in the corner and she's like watching this, but thinking, my husband's a good man. He's not going to mess with this. And suddenly Alan Rickman gets whatever. And slowly it progresses into this questionable origin. Alan Rickman, Emma Thompson go, Christmas shopping. They fight. Alan Rickman finds a necklace and he's asking to buy it, which we have in a great.
So
cameo.
Alan Rickman buys the gold necklace. He brings it home. Emma Thompson goes through his jacket pocket because she's hanging up her sweater, finds the box in there, sees the necklace. She thinks it's for her. Come Christmas Eve, the night before the obviously Christmas, but the night of the actual play or whatever. Mm-hmm. She thinks that she's going to get a gold necklace, and everybody, I guess, gets to open one present before Christmas. So they all open it, and she knows exactly what she wants. She goes for this box-looking package, opens it up. It's a Joni Mitchell CD. She's like, oh, realizes that that necklace isn't intended for her, has a good cry in the bedroom, then comes out, wipes her face, and is ready to go for what she has to do as a dutiful mom.
Yep. And then the best bit, which I had always expected more from, was the confrontation at
After the play,
after everybody's kind of joined up, she just kind of walks up to Alan Rickman on the sly and just gives him this line of like,
so what would you do in my position?
In my position, if you found out that, you know, your husband was cheating on you, and Alan Rickman's like, oh, I'm such a terrible, terrible husband. And she's like, she asked a question of like,
which, mind you,
beautifully written.
It was such a great ultimatum for her as an actress, mm-hmm. and for probably the best writing of the whole movie, for her to be like, should I leave you and break everything, you know, and break all these hearts and whatever, and make it difficult for the kids, or do I stay and be miserable because I know how broken we are, like, essentially, to paraphrase, but that's pretty much how it goes. And then she leaves it at that because the kids show up, and I'm like, you go, Emma Thompson. You leave Alan Rickman. And I'm like, okay, cool. This is probably the only, like, you know, actual good thing, like, surviving thing of this. That's actually the saving grace. And then at the end, you see that she's there waiting for him after that 1 month later. She's waiting for him at the airport. He comes like, oh, I've missed her. And he's like, whatever. And they're like, oh, yeah, whatever. And she's like, okay, let's go, kids. And they go. And it's like, you stayed with him?
You stayed with him? Me so angry. I was like, why would you stay with him?
Why were we not drinking at that point? Because it was like, that was a
because immense, it was the next day.
Because that was in the morning.
It was like 11:30 in the morning.
It wasn't even 11:30. I think it was like before 10. It was time where we had waffles because Spencer made waffles.
Waffles.
But we couldn't drink with the waffles. It would have been bad. We had no rum chata. Don't judge us. There was no Christmas. What?
Anyway.
Yeah, it's one of, and to top it off, the stories, so Emma Thompson, when she goes and cries in the bedroom, first off, she explains early in the movie that Joni Mitchell is the woman that taught her her cold English heart how to feel, and the fact that Alan Rickman's character buys her a CD that she already has
it,
and she's had for years, is just like the kick in the no-no zone, and she goes into the bedroom to cry. And the stories from set were she did this scene 12 times. Wow. and every single time she came into set, they just let it roll. She came onto the set and was sobbing. This is like
taking a great
actor. Oh, no, because it gets better. Apparently, after talking to Emma Thompson, she was thinking about when Kenneth Branagh left her for Helena Bonham Carter, and that's how she was making herself cry. Oh, and then as soon as they got the one, they're like, you're not filming anything else, go home, and they didn't see her for a couple of days. Like,
and this is
my
the thing.
Soul.
This scene is like bringing Sir Anthony Hopkins to a mud wrestling match. It's like there's no reason to have someone so great and out of place of a crappy movie like this to perform something like that scene. Like Emma Thompson is a freaking treasure, and mm-hmm. her role in this movie is so much more of a higher caliber than everything else in this movie that it's almost like it should have been its own thing.
Well, let's establish that Alan Rickman, in and of himself, is an amazing actor.
Mm-hmm. He is
and
an amazing actor.
If we had swapped somebody out in any other story, if Hugh Grant, they had swapped and Alan Rickman was the prime minister, which would have been super even more cringe. But Hugh Grant in the Alan Rickman slot, you would have been like, girl, you better leave him now.
Well, and here's the thing. The sad truth is, yes, Alan Rickman is a great actor, but he is not great in this movie. He does not have any redeeming scenes, any great lines.
He doesn't have any quips. He doesn't have anything. There's nothing. There.
I mean, you can only do so much with what the scripts give you. And like for his character, it gave him basically nothing.
It gave him sleeves.
He could have literally been one of the two naked double body doubles in this movie.
Which we don't even talk about that Martin Freeman and some unnamed girl, which it's never for TV.
Can
they
I
always
put my hands here? And just
so, Alan Rickman and, or it's not Alan Rickman, Martin Freeman and this other actress are body doubles for some apparently
snuff
sexy
film.
Sexy drama.
It's a snuff film.
It is, my gosh, Eddie, stop it. Movie. Stop it.
They're butt naked, and he's like doing robotic grinding on her, and it's like, what?
It's probably for like Eyes Wide Shut or something.
God, no.
Eyes Wide Shut. But yeah, they're literally in there, which you don't know about. They have more of an opportunity to actually like loosely form characters than Alan Rickman. They have more words than Alan Rickman does this
because they talk to each other.
They have to.
They're literally in the middle of like simulated sex and like, so how is the traffic coming on the way?
And she's like, oh, it was terrible, you know, whatever. Blah, blah,
like,
blah.
You need to put your hands on her, you know, on her breast. Let me just warm
light.
These up for you real quick. And then, so how was the ride?
But the like, thing is, like, anytime Martin Freeman asked her a question, you could just like see like the mildest sense of relief of like, oh, good, I get to talk about something that's not this.
Yeah. But the other thing is they also end up getting engaged at the end of the movie. So their whole entire 4 months,
so it was,
4 weeks
it was like,
together as well.
It was like,
it will last throughout
it was
time.
Like 4 or 5 weeks, right? The entire movie.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, for them, like 2 months being together. But, oh, well, yeah, give or take.
And the crazy part is I feel like they are probably on the best track out of
exactly.
all the couples.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. They seem the most healthy as well because yes. it's like they're just able to consider like communicate and talk all the time, even in the midst of the most awkward situations. So
yeah, and then we have Colin Firth.
We talked
Colin
about
Firth
Colin
stories.
Firth.
First, no, the other Colin, the guy that is the British guy that decides no British women want him, and he must travel to America, Wisconsin, to find ladies that, because he has British accent, will be all up on that jam. And surprise, surprise, he finds women that are all up on that jam in Wisconsin, and he brings back two of them for him and his buddy.
Okay, so like his logic leaving the UK, I was like, yeah, he's right.
You did say that.
Yeah.
Both times. So Skunk Spencer was like, makes sense. Go to America. They're going to love your accent. And then we get, in the second time around, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. He went to America. I bet they love his accent. And I was like, Spencer across the board. Like,
out of all the things that this movie was trying to sell me, that logic, I was like, yeah. Like,
it's true.
I really feel like that'd work. And it did in the movie. Yeah.
He comes back with the actress from Scary Movie and Denise Richards, I believe.
Yes.
So, which was interesting.
There was only one other story I think we're missing, which is Laura Linney. And Laura,
but that wasn't even really a story. It was like just a vignette, like a very, very small vignette where Laura Linney has this huge crush on another employee, and they end up going to the company Christmas party, going home together, but she foregoes doing anything with them because she has a brother with mental disabilities that she helps take care of, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to that story. Yeah. Like, she sends, what is his name, Rodrigo Santino or
something like that.
It's in the notes. Aren't you looking at the notes?
No, I wasn't, because I don't see a Rodrigo.
It might be Thomas Sangster.
No, Thomas is the little boy.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Brody Sangster, the Maze Runner kid.
My brain goes Ferb from Phineas and Ferb. Hey.
Why didn't you look for the name? Since
Because it's not my job on notes. I am the intern. But not for that. Yeah, even though it says I'm supposed to be doing it. Anyway, yeah. Laura Linney's character, she falls in love. They work at Alan Rickman's office. And Carl is the guy's name.
Oh, yeah. Rodrigo Santoro.
Oh, Santoro. See, I wasn't too far off.
Spencer.
I wasn't too far off. But yeah. And then obviously they have a moment. They're about to do the deed. And then she gets a phone call and he ends up leaving. And that's it. Like, there's not much that goes on from there. You see them pop up every now and then for other stories, but not to further their own. Which, funny enough, Laura Linney has stated that her own person, not as the character, but the actress herself, says that she really wished she didn't pick up that phone when they were making out and whatever, because apparently she was apparently going through a bad breakup, and he was apparently going through a bad breakup, and they were like, hey, you know, we're both hurting, but hey, at least we're going to make each other feel nice when we do our scene. Mm. So, which is really awkward to use that as a form of coping.
Yeah,
so,
no, not great. Yeah,
thank you.
So, let's talk, outside of obviously the ones that we've already mentioned, any highlights or issues, main ones?
Oh, we didn't talk about Thomas Brody Singer's portion of the movie. Being on the opposite side of the stepdad who doesn't want him.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is really weird.
He's in love.
How he's old is he, too? He's like 10.
He's 2.
He's a kid. He's a baby in this movie. Yeah. And he has this huge crush. He's apparently in love with this other student that's in his class. This girl.
From America.
But her name's her
Joanna.
She's Joanna, but her real name is Olivia something. She's actually the voice of Marceline from Adventure Time. So, she's also Vanessa Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb, which makes it even better that Ferb, who ends up crushing on
Martine McCutcheon?
No, that's not
her. No, that's Natalie, sorry.
No, she's Olivia something. But Vanessa Doofenshmirtz is Olivia, what's her name, who's this girl. And then Ferb is actually Thomas Brody. And they end up crushing and like getting, again, another kind of pseudo relationship. But now they're like old. I don't even know, because Ferb is not that old. Anyway, like, their entire thing is, again, a play on this. And I'm like, okay, I see you guys. Like, but yeah, the relationship in this, he's crushing on her.
Olivia Olson?
Yes. Because he decides, he's like, I'm in love with an English girl. I have to learn to play the drums because she's a goddess. And we're just like, really? Really,
and,
buddy?
And so he's essentially just stuck in his room, just banging on the drums.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so let's talk highlights or issues. Is there any that you guys can think of offhand pertaining to things that we haven't already said? Let's start with Amy, since she's the one who's got the most experience here and she doesn't say everybody else's at the same time.
Okay. highlight, and I'll leave the one that I know you'll probably want to talk about, Eddie. Highlight for me is Bill Nighy doesn't change this entire movie. He starts out hating the song that he's going to have to sing. He knows it's going to make him money. At the end of the thing, he still hates the song he was going to sing. His entire concept for this movie and his character is not just one note. It's just literally like, I'm an aging rock star, and all I want for Christmas is to make money and be famous again. And even at the point where he realizes his manager, who is his like BFF, is still there for all those years, it's the same thing. It's just Bill Nighy. And I'm like, I like you, Bill Nighy. Thank you for being here. I know it wasn't worth it, but it made it at least a little bit better for me. Okay. Next.
Spencer.
Yeah, for me, I think my issue is going to be all of Colin Firth and his nonsense. Like, okay, so he had to go out of the country to write a book, and then there's this cleaner that he's set up with, and he falls in love with the cleaner, but like, he can't talk to her, and she can't really talk to him. Like the fact that he's like, the first conversation that they have is, I want to marry you.
Yeah.
Is
where
bananas.
They can understand each other. Yeah.
And even
and
that was
weeks. In 5 weeks. Come on.
If you calculated all of that time, it was honestly probably just a few hours, because they weren't together all the time. Yeah. Let's be real.
He had a book to pretend to write.
Well, and yeah. Also he was divorcing his wife who was shagging his brother. So like, that's a rebound relationship if ever we heard it anywhere.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, so that's not going to work out for them, and that's one of mine. What about you, Ed? What do you got? What's the first one you're going
with? I want to know, what was the one that you thought I was going to say, Amy? Go ahead.
Highlight is Rowan.
Okay, that is true. And the fact that he's probably in it for a total of maybe 5 minutes really shows how low the bar is set for this movie, because this movie is god-awful, and Mr. Bean has to come in and save it. You have Rowan Atkinson, who comes in at two specific scenes, obviously to be the most Mr. Bean he could be for a situation. Oddly enough, the creators come out and stated that there's a theory, possibly, I don't know if the creator as of the film, Richard Curtis, has actually stated this, but there was speculation that Rowan Atkinson is actually an angel. He was trying to, first off, in the scene where he takes too long to wrap the gift, he was hoping that essentially Alan Rickman would change his mind and not buy the necklace. And then obviously he was stalling the person at the gate to keep them from checking his boarding pass, ultimately not having a boarding pass, but allowing the little boy to go and run by security and join the no fly list from here on out because of his, terrorist acts.
Yeah.
but that was probably and mostly because I'm a big fan of Rowan Atkinson. He's a great actor. He's always wonderful in everything that he does. He is such a comedic genius. In this movie, and the fact that why they don't mention or allude towards anything, because the fact that he does these things has no rhyme or reason. He's just there and does it.
And then he walks away, and that's the best part.
No, it's not the best part, because there's no reasoning behind it.
He's an angel.
It's him.
How do you know that, though, unless I would have just told you now?
Because Rowan has always been an angel.
No.
Yes, he has.
The worst part about this movie is the fact that it got made. Someone looked at this story and was like, this all checks out. Yeah. I mean, woman's, this guy doesn't speak the woman's language, maybe has a few conversations with her in broken Portuguese. He should marry her. Prime Minister, one of the most decorated roles in the English government. Make him a creep. Have him go out with his young assistant. Have him make out and have him be seen at a school play.
Impressionable children everywhere.
Would be a scandal of the century.
Oh, without a doubt. Like 100%. Like he would be out of office. He should have been out of office.
Vote of no confidence.
Like all of these stories were just so cringe. Who would have thought Andrew Lincoln's character, let's have a best friend who is secretly crushing on his newlywed best friend's wife, and have him have like these weird cuts from their wedding where it's just of her smile, her eyes, her face, her dress,
it's her.
And what was he going to do with all that footage? No one says that part. No. And have him like essentially come out as this stalker. This movie is the absolute, this is like Stalker, the Christmas musical, like without music. This is absolutely one of the worst Christmas movies around. And I say this with all my heart, Spencer. Spencer, I say this with all my heart. The Santa Claus, the movie.
Yes.
Is like Citizen Kane compared to this movie.
Honestly, it's out of there. No.
Say it, Spencer. Yes or no? Is it not?
Yeah, no, it is.
Like, yeah. This movie is horrible. And I don't know why it's even in theaters. This should be like, there should be, for as much as there's protesting and talking about like the whole Me Too movement, all, this is absolutely against all of that. This is not okay. This should be like, Women, the Target at Christmas. That's the title of the movie. Like, this movie has no, like, cooth to it. It is so unbelievable that they were able to look at this movie and were like, oh, yeah, how can we add to this, you know, Poop Sunday? Let's make Bill Nighy the man who always looks 100 and have him sing a pop song of a copy of a song that he had done apparently previous in the movie's history and just rechange it and then make him the saltiest old man that we can be, i.e. him.
I do like curmudgeon Bill Nighy, though. He's kind of fun.
Yeah, there's...
I know, there's better ones.
There's everything other than this movie. So I did put a roundtable question in here. So let's wrap this thing up before I get, you know, bust a blood vessel. So obviously this movie's god awful. However, I feel like the majority of that cringe and that irresponsibility is placed on the director. So if you could change the director out for this film, who would you pick? We're going to go ahead and start with Amy.
Easy peasy. Late great Nora Ephron. Nora Ephron, for context, is Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail. I think even with this writing, she could turn this thing around and make it not only beautiful, but timeless and worth it.
Okay. Spencer.
What?
No, I guess.
No, what?
No, that's fine.
Why?
It seems like a safe bet, but sure, that's fine. It's literally the same movie, so...
Maybe I want it to be a better version of what it is.
So I guess
Spencer,
throws out, is there a better version of this movie? No.
There's four variations of this in different countries following the same storyline. So technically, no.
Spencer, go ahead.
I like how you shot down your idea.
Yeah.
I can shoot down my ideas all day. It's me.
Okay, my director is John Hughes. Like, let's make this like a 1980s, like, you know, I feel like if you shifted it down there to the 80s and then made it like, I don't know, maybe younger and a bit more like peppy, you could get a version of this movie that would not be a train wreck. Like, also, you have to get rid of Bill Nighy and that whole thing. Just get that out, unless you want to put in like Cyndi Lauper or some cool pop song. But okay. Yeah, my mind is on John Hughes.
Do you guys have a second choice?
For completely left field, I mean, I would kind of steal one of your favorite directors, to be very honest, because I don't know what direction this concept would go, and it's nothing that we've seen from him currently.
So help me God, if you say Guillermo del Toro, that makes no sense at all.
But
especially with the whole Portuguese part. Like,
exactly.
No.
Exactly.
That would completely... No.
Like,
it Pick would your be... own from your own brain. Chihuahuas.
Our small dogs from Chihuahua. Mexico.
Still waiting.
Oh, I didn't know that you wanted another
Spencer,
director.
Do you have a second one?
Yes. I'm blanking. Oh, yeah. Only because he would make an insane movie, I'd go with Taika Waititi.
Hey, that's a good one.
It would be by default interesting.
Oh, without a doubt. I feel like that would actually add, like, he would like really highlight all of the cringe parts,
mm-hmm,
and make them actually funny.
Yeah.
So
it would be a funny movie.
It would be a funny movie. Amy, do you have your second one?
I mean, I'm looking at all these, and someone that would just make it a total farce would be Mel Brooks. Like, I'm just picking people that I would think, like, if we have to maintain this story, like,
I just said someone who would change the direction of the film.
Mel Brooks would change the direction of the film.
No, a spoof movie that's spoofing this, kind of how Airplane was spoofing, what was that, Zero Hour or something?
Mm-hmm.
There could be a thing there.
I'd get a better musical number.
He would get paid. That's all we know. I mean, yeah.
Merchandising.
Yeah. Okay. If I were to pick two directors, I honestly would say my first one would probably have to be Damien Chazelle, because I feel like Damien Chazelle, the director from La La Land, as well as Whiplash, has a very unique perspective to where, yes, this movie is all in London, but it's an interesting kind of perspective for somebody who is creating a love story with a sense of music. If not, if we're looking on the UK side, Guy Ritchie would be another one that I would consider.
That'd be interesting.
But ultimately, my number one choice for all of this would have to be James Wan and do it in the style of Saw, so that everybody is dead at the end, because none of these people need to continue to live on. The character wise, the actors can keep going on, but all of these people deserve to be, you know, to perish. And honestly, for as much cringe and future lawsuits that are going to happen because of this, I'm pretty sure they all deserved it. So I mean,
Danny Boyle would be too nice to it. Like, he would, it would be more realistic, but all the cringe would be gone.
What has Danny Boyle done?
Yesterday, Once.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't do Sing Street, did he?
No. No, that's actually an interesting perspective.
Oh, and Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got the chaps.
So, as we wrap up this episode, let's go ahead and go around the table. Start with Amy, whether or not the film passes or fails. And how many monocles?
So, welcome to Season of Suffering, Part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
We already said welcomes. I was like,
I just want to reiterate that. So, as I stated inside of the episode, I hadn't seen this in 7 years since watching it this previous week with these two fine upstanding gentlemen. And I realized not only had my taste changed, the one onesie twosie bright spot were just so ridiculous that a movie they do not make. So I will be very honest. Does this movie pass? Oh, no. Oh, no, it doesn't. Even though there are some amazing actors, they are used very, very poorly. And it just hurts all the parts of me that actually care about things like romantic comedies. So with that being said, my sweet, sweet rose-colored monocles have been crushed. And this gets a... Oh, I can't use imaginary numbers again, can I, no. Spencer? Darn it. This gets a... It's going to get a... 0.001 just for the two lines that I really like from it.
Spencer, please save this dumpster fire.
You can't save a fire when it's on like this.
Yeah, no one can save us. Just like that movie title, no one will save you.
True, very true.
This movie fails. Like, so much more spectacularly than I thought going into this movie that I'm actually surprised. There is literally no reason to be talking about this movie in the year 2023.
Yep.
So let's dump this and leave it here. No more anniversary movies for you.
And or at least for Amy. No more giving her that option. You've literally lost your privilege for next year. We have the right to veto one of your movies again.
Not for Season of Suffering Part 3.
Oh, absolutely.
Spencer and I get to sit down for that.
Nope.
All right. So really, I think to sum up how I feel about this, I'm going to quote Eartha Kitt from the movie Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yes.
Flee! Flee from this place! Ah! That's what she said.
I love
yeah, so 0 out of 0.
There you go.
Yay!
This movie fails horribly. This is the airliner falling out of the sky, crashing, and many people die as the plane lands on a schoolhouse full of children at a nativity play.
More than one lobster at the birth of Jesus.
This absolutely decimates any logic, and this movie should not have been made, period. This is a horrible movie. And I don't understand what the fanfare is for this film. I don't understand why people are flocking. I don't know why this movie's in theaters right now.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
You know, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't give any rhyme or reason. Why are people okay with this? We literally, you watch this movie and all human progress goes like back 3 years. Like, there's no purpose for this movie other than to remind you of all the people who are now currently either getting sued or are rotting in jail because of this type of activity. Like, seriously, who is it right now? Someone, P. Diddy has been sued again by another underage person for this kind of activity. Why are we okay with this? And why are we okay with watching it at Christmas?
I honestly just saw the apology. I was like, I don't even have time to unpack whatever he did. I don't even know.
Yeah. So this movie belongs in the garbage. I would gladly pay hundreds of dollars to go to Walmart, grab every copy, and throw it in the dumpster. Stomp on it, light it on fire, and get rid of it.
Don't forget to send the receipt to the producers.
Oh, absolutely. This movie gets a 0.00000 monocles. And I don't think I've ever given a zero monocle score before.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know if I have either. Maybe.
So,
Incredible Bulk?
We never reviewed that.
It's the Amazing Bulk.
I'm going to get if you're going to get it wrong,
at least get it a little bit right after talking about a wrong movie. So this movie absolutely is abhorrent. It should not be watched. And I feel dumber for watching it. So there you go. Zero monocles. And hopefully next week will be better. But that about
wraps. It won't. It's the season of suffering.
Anything will be better than this.
I mean, it's Hallmark.
I saw one in advance. So
that's right. It's not Hallmark next week. It's Spencer, ludicrous for Christmas.
Spencer, these are grade A actors doing Hallmark worthy movies.
No. Next week is ludicrous.
Like I said, either way, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philmosphers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at philmosphers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, romantic comedies. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at philmosphers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Excuse me.
There you go.
Got a hiccup. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Philmosphers. Give us a follow or a subscribe. Let us know how you feel about the episode. Drop us a line in the comment section down below. And let us know how we're doing. Do we deserve a 5-star review? I believe we earned it.
We have.
They really have. I mean it.
Yeah.
Also, if you really think that, you know, Love Actually should definitely be removed from any cinema during this holiday season, let us know in the comments as well. You can also catch us wherever on the socials, whether it's Facebook at facebook.com/philmosophers or at Twitter, Instagram, or Threads at philmosophy101. You can also find us on Blue Sky at thefilmosopherspodcast.social on Blue Sky. And you can find us over, you can actually find all of our extra content over on Instagram, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene and on Instagram, Instagram only.
That's right. Tune in this entire month as we continue on with the season of suffering, as we have a very special treat for you next week that will be revealed next week. So, from all of us here at the Film Philmosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still creating suffering, Amy.
Class dismissed.
Ho, ho, ho.